The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this August 13th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. In here with me is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on this dreary, rainy Wednesday afternoon in the Auburn Opelika area. And man, we got a fun show on tap for you today. First two shows of this week have been really, really fun. And a lot of interactive conversations and a lot more of those coming up today as well. We've got a lot of lists to go over and react to and break down some news out of Auburn football for fall camp in terms of receivers and punt returners, kick returners, things like that. And so we're also going to visit with Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, but more on that in just a moment. But Christian, how are you, sir? Happy Wednesday to you.
Happy Wednesday. Yeah, hopefully it's another really, really good show. You talked about it. Monday and Tuesday were really, really good, man. Mm-hmm. We had so many people asking questions, calling in, and bringing up some really, really good conversational points. As of right now, I don't know if this makes people happy or upset. I don't have a 15-minute rant on Auburn football today.
Give it time.
I was going to say, yeah, at least scheduled. I wasn't necessarily planning on going where all I went yesterday, but happy to know that with some of the texts and some of the call-ins, I'm not alone on that, yeah, that rant side of things when we were talking about the offensive play calling a lot yesterday. But yeah, we're talking Auburn-Baylor to get everything started. A conversation we've been meaning to have over the past couple of days, but just the idea and the concept that's been kind of floating around the world of college football that would allow recruits to sign early the day of August 1st when they get their official visits for that junior year. And so what does that mean for the word commitment? What would that possibly mean for college football? Would that open things up? Would that make things a whole lot more clear? Would that just add even more confusion because all of a sudden a coach gets fired and, you know, all of a sudden you really have nowhere that you feel like you can go? You mentioned we're going to talk with Jordan Hill of Dogs 24/7. Again, as Georgia fall camp continues to roll on, and they are awaiting Marshall here in just a couple of weeks. And then some news around the SEC as well. All of that in a jam-packed hour number one. That being said, the phone lines are open here to start the show if you would like to be a part of it. 334-321-1390. Again, that number, 334-321-1390. Anything you were rolling over in bed, couldn't sleep last night, that you would like to share with us, man, you can be on the phone lines. You can join us here on the show. The text box always open as well at 334-784-1067.
And so we jump right in, and it's a conversation we will continue to have all the way up until August 29th, and it's Auburn versus Baylor. And according to the AP poll, right, you look at the different coaches poll and the AP poll and things like that, were you surprised to not see Baylor ranked in the top 25 of either one of these polls? We didn't figure Auburn would be, but given how this game has been hyped up and given the love, I would say, that Baylor has received preseason, sure, yeah, were you surprised to not see Baylor as a top 25 team? I know they were close and Auburn was kind of on the outside looking in too, but just generically, were you shocked to not see Baylor as a top 25 team?
If I would have seen them, it would have been kind of taking that Texas Tech or Boise State spot at 23, 24, or 25. That would be a lot more just based off of the year that they had last year rather than the overall hype that they have this year, at least a couple of weeks ago, before a bunch of these analysts and experts all picked Baylor to win the Big 12. I've always been in the mindset of where I guess I was more surprised that Auburn was like 37th or 38th. I thought, and I have thought this the entire time, the winner of this game will work its way into the top 20 or the top 25, anywhere from 20 to 25.
And like week two, you think winner of this gets a ranking because of it?
I would have thought so, because I thought it would have been Baylor at 28 and Auburn at 29.
Oh, okay.
It might take a little bit more just because Auburn's the 37th or 38th ranked team in the country. But that was more of my mindset of this is going to be a very, very exciting game, and it's continued to build the excitement. Man, the fan bases are getting into it. A bunch of people are really starting to defend their side, whether that's the money line, whether that's the spread. People are really starting to dive into this game, and so as unfortunate as we talked about it being on a Friday night, maybe you're going to get that spotlight again, because it's Colorado and Georgia Tech, and it's Auburn and Baylor. So there's going to be a lot of people watching it, but my mindset has always been you work your way into week two, the winner of this game will be in the top 25.
Well, I think there's no secret that in terms of what week one will bring for the college football season, we know there's week zero games, and there's some on, Thursday night of week one. I mean, heck, you have a top 25 team in action on Thursday night, and in fact, I think you don't. Okay, I was going to see if Missouri was. But you have a top 25 team in action on Thursday, August 28th in Boise State, who's taking on South Florida on the road in Tampa at Raymond James Stadium, which could get kind of good
Thursday night. Maddox Maxson's going to have to perform a lot better this year just because you don't have Ashton Jeanty to hand the ball off to 25 times a game.
A top 25 game in week in week zero, which take that for what it is. We saw Florida State as a top 10 team last year when Georgia Tech beat them. And
how do
Florida,
I feel about that, by chance?
Yeah, you want to – I can toss it over to you if you'd like to
– No, you can just say it for how we feel on the show.
Oh, well, we think it's the dumbest thing possible that there are preseason rankings. But it is what it is. So a top 25 here. So a top 25 game on week zero between Iowa State and Kansas State. So those are two respectful teams. I think people think they're going to be solid, and I don't hate them being ranked. But in terms of week one, again, Thursday night, Boise State taking on South Florida. On Friday, you have Auburn and Baylor. You also have Georgia Tech and Colorado, which will be a really exciting game. I hate that they're both going on at the exact same time. And then we've talked about the fact that there are three top 10 matchups in week one to open up the college football season. But Auburn-Baylor is getting so much buzz, and I don't know if it's because we are in Auburn and covering Auburn, and our social media is full of Auburn-Baylor. Maybe that is, and maybe we're seeing more of it than most people, but I just feel like folks are talking about this game more than most. I mean, how often have you heard people talking about Texas and Ohio State week one? Folks, the number one team in the country in all preseason polls across America, the Texas Longhorns, are hopping on a plane, going to Columbus, Ohio, to the defending national champions, and taking on Ryan Day and the Buckeyes with a number three next to their name in Columbus. Nobody's talking about that game. Nobody else is talking about all these other games. LSU Clemson's getting a lot of buzz for obvious reasons. Nobody's talking about Alabama, Florida State. Nobody's talking
Syracuse and Tennessee.
Yeah, Syracuse and Tennessee.
The 11 a.m. game that kicks everything off, as does
Texas Ohio State. Yeah, nobody's talking about those games. But for whatever reason, it just seems Virginia Tech, South Carolina, Notre Dame and Miami on Sunday night on August 31st. Nope, I'm not seeing the coverage of those games like I'm seeing Auburn versus Baylor.
Right, and I mean, obviously, that's the market you're in.
Sure.
We obviously see more of that, and we understand that that's how that works. If we were in Columbus, which Jacob still wishes he was, there'd be a lot more talk along
Buckeye at heart, right?
True. There's a lot more buzz around those types of games, but you really do feel like whether that's guys with podcasts on YouTube or guys with these video streams and things like that, Auburn and Baylor has had a lot of screen time leading up to this game. And I think it's because both teams are expected to have really, really solid seasons, and you feel like it is a very equal comparison on the standpoint of what both of these teams are hoping to do in their respective conferences.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And there's just so much excitement around week one of the season in general. And these two teams in particular, Baylor and Auburn, the potential is through the roof, and there's a lot up for grabs in week one on that Friday night in Waco, Texas. Let's get to the phone lines for the first time today. They're open for you, 334-321-1390. We get to them now. You're on the line. Who are we speaking with?
Hey, guys. John in Auburn.
What's up, John?
You were talking about early season schedules. I don't think enough is being made. I'll be quick. I don't think enough is being made of Alabama's early season schedule.
Florida State
stunk last year, but I think we're prisoners in the moment of that squad. I mean, that's a team that with a new quarterback and a new regime, easily capable of hushing up doubters week one. Week two, they have Louisiana Monroe. That's the team Saban lost to, so if DeBoer's able to win that, I would expect an extension and a raise. And then week three, you got Wisconsin coming into town. Yeah, they're not supposed to, but that's a Big Ten team. That's a game at 11 o'clock that Wisconsin will be much more up for than Alabama.
John, a question for you that we were able to talk a little bit about yesterday. If it's 21-17 Alabama as you start the fourth quarter week one, but Florida State has the ball at midfield, are Florida State fans excited and happy, or is it the Alabama fans that are stressed out about what's to come? What do you feel like is more of the possibility?
I feel like each of those is a possibility, and to be honest with you, I hope with Ty Simpson being named the quarterback at Alabama, I hope the dolt from The Simpsons will be over the PA system at Doak Campbell.
Well, there you go. Well, hey, a road game at Florida State. Yeah, appreciate the call, John. Road game at Florida State, hosting Wisconsin week three. They get a bye, and then they head to Athens. On paper, the logos, that's a brutal stretch. You play a team from the ACC, a team from the Big Ten, and the second best team in the SEC. Like, on paper, just logos, that's a heck of a start for any team in a power conference.
Yeah.
But, to John's point, Florida State was terrible last year, but they will be improved. Wisconsin, at least early on, I think they'll be solid. Their schedule's not all that tough for Wisconsin. I don't know if Luke Fickell's the answer there, which I hate because I really liked Luke Fickell. I loved him at Cincinnati, and I thought it was a home run hire for Wisconsin when they made it. I think this is a make-or-break year for them, and Camp Randall will be going crazy. 11 a.m., Alabama comes to town. That's going to be an awesome game in week three. But if you're Alabama and you trip up in either one of those games, then you have to go to Athens? All of a sudden, Alabama has a 2-2 start, and the sky is falling in Tuscaloosa. It's absolutely falling in Tuscaloosa. With games still remaining on the road at Missouri, home against Tennessee, at South Carolina, home against LSU, home against Oklahoma, and on the road against Auburn. If the Crimson Tide slip up against Florida State or Wisconsin, you better believe they're going to lose to some of those other teams on their schedule.
When's the last time Alabama's given up on their football season on October 18th?
When's the last time Alabama started 2-2? I don't know.
About
the
last time they played a Power 5 game on the road.
Yeah, I was about to say before Saban. I mean, pre-Saban. I mean, literally, that's when it happened for Alabama. It just doesn't happen there.
What is that? Are we 2 PS, right?
2 PS?
Yeah, two post-Sabans.
Two post-Sabans.
Like this is the second year?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Talking about like BC, but...
Gotcha. Yeah, I went over my head on that one. No, appreciate the call, John, and you're absolutely right. Those first few games for Alabama are going to be tough. And so, but again, to go back to our conversation, nobody's talking about Alabama going to Tallahassee. Nope. To be honest with you, nobody cares that Alabama's going to Tallahassee because of how bad Florida State was, yes, but it's just so wild to see that what is now not a top 25 game between Auburn and Baylor. And maybe it's because it is on that Friday night. Maybe it's because it's isolated. Would the Auburn-Baylor game be talked about as much as it already has been if it was thrown in there on Saturday somewhere?
No.
In the middle of all the other chaos?
And that's what we've talked about is the fact of, yes, it's unfortunate Well, now it's more unfortunate for me than you, but with Auburn playing on a Auburn High playing on a Friday or a Thursday night rather, Lee Scott still playing on Friday. But we talked about how it could have been one of those games that was overshadowed and not really talked about in week one, just because there's the 11 a.m. games, there's the 2 o'clock games, there's the 4 o'clock games, there's the 6:30 games, the 7:30s, and then the 8s, and you wake up and you get all the games on Sunday, then you get the one on Monday, then you feel like you get the one on Tuesday. Like, it just keeps going because they have this marathon that they run on week one. And so, yeah, and now that the dust has settled, you feel like this game is getting the appropriate amount, again, I've used the word screen time, just because you've seen both of those logos on either side of the screen when you're watching TV or you're watching some of these videos, because a lot of people are spending time talking about it, and it's because it's going to be one of the first premier football games that's watched of the college football season.
For two fan bases that historically have nothing to do with each other, for two programs that just, we've seen it more on the basketball floor than we've seen on the football field. I mean, Auburn and Baylor just don't really have that history. I think there was, or there would be, a crowd that would like to, and I think you hit on this a moment ago, that would compare Auburn and Baylor in terms of historical relevancy, historical success, expectations versus performance year in and year out, right?
I'd still say Auburn has the total upper hand.
I would too.
But I think this year is funny enough, very, very comparable from what Baylor's expecting to do in the Big 12 this year, or hoping to do, and what Auburn is hoping to do in the SEC this year. You go back to, again, talking about how many times, this is the fifth matchup between Auburn and Baylor. Baylor is 2-1-1 against Auburn. The last matchup was September 18th. Unless you've looked this up, you won't know the answer. I'll give you a guess. What was the year that they played that game?
Oh, gosh.
September 18th, Baylor won 15-14.
Well, based off that score, it's going to be before most people listening were alive, I'd have to guess.
1976.
Oh, okay. Well, that's not as far back. That's not as bad as I thought.
The largest margin of victory was Baylor by 6 in 1965 when they won 14-8.
I have a feeling that this year's game may beat those. They may score more points than that.
If not,
watch out.
Okay, never mind. So that's the largest margin of victory for Baylor. The first matchup, Auburn won 33-13.
Ah, there you go. That's more.
I'd love bookended scores like that.
Yeah, I would hate for Auburn to win by 20 points on the road in Waco.
Baylor averages 13 points in the 5 matchups against Auburn.
Because history.
They scored 15, gosh. 10, 14, and 13.
Holy smokes. Well, looking at Baylor historically, before we get to our first break, God, this football program in the last 2 decades, it is the definition of low, 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 super high, low, 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 super high, low, and I'm talking about season performance.
Yeah, it feels like you're at Superman at Six Flags.
Literally. Like,
it feels like that's almost like what, obviously, the standard raised a little bit, but that's the LSU of we'll win eight games. Oh, there we go. We won 14 games in the national championship. All right, back down to 7.
Yeah, I mean, you just have so many of these seasons. I mean, 3-9, 4-8, 4-8, 7-6. Oh, 10-3, back down to 8-5. Then they rounded off 3 10-win seasons in a row in 2013, 14, and 15. Then it's right back to 7-6, 1-11, 7-6. Oh, ta-da. 11-3 in 2019, then you're back down to 2-7 during COVID, 12-2, right, in 2021, but since then, 6-7, 3-9, 8-5. I mean, Baylor consistently is not that good. They've had their moments. Heck, they have a Heisman Trophy winner.
I was going to say, what did they go in 2010 and 2011?
2011 was their good year. 2011 was 10-3. The year before, that was RG3. They were 7-6 the year before.
Okay.
7-6, and RG3 took them to 10-3. And a good bowl game. You know what they followed that up with? 8-5. Baylor screams 8-5 to me. 8-4 regular season, if that. Historically, if you probably went here and did the math, it's probably closer to 7-6. They're a team in the Big 12 that you have to respect. That's always a threat. But if you line up and play them for 4 quarters, more than likely you're going to beat them. That's what I think of with Baylor year in and year out.
what's the word? You should?
You should. Yeah, you should. And I don't know. You could say the same about Auburn at times. Auburn's in that second tier of the SEC historically. I don't know if Baylor is in an ever-changing Big 12. I don't know if you'd put them historically in the second tier of that conference. Maybe. Last 20 years, probably.
Now that Texas and OU are out, probably.
Yeah, probably now. But regardless, for a game that's not a top 25 matchup, that doesn't even have a top 25 team in it, the coverage and the buzz and the excitement around Auburn and Baylor continues to grow, and you know it's going to here as we get closer to the start of the football season on August 29th. We will take our first break here in hour number one. Come back, talk about some NIL things, about August 1st and what it means moving forward. We'll talk about that coming up next.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, talking a little NIL things and what this August 1st date means or could mean or will mean. I mean, there's a lot of floating ideas around this date that we heard so much about, right, from Hugh Freeze and from John Cohen and things like that. But this seems to be a little bit different from what you're wanting to talk about.
Yeah, this is not the Auburn's just need to get to August 1, get to August 1st, and then you're going to see some of those changes. This is much more on the sophomores becoming juniors and then the juniors in high school now having the chance to go ahead and make their college commitment final then. And so there's this concept that's been floating around for a little bit, and I wouldn't say that it's picking up any crazy steam, at least not as of right now, but where August 1st, you're able to start having those phone calls, you're able to start giving those official offers. I remember Auburn doing it here just a couple of weeks ago about sending all of these kids their official visits, and it has all the toilet paper and their name on the back of the jerseys, like that.
Yeah, you're on the clock, right?
Right.
You're allowed to be talked to now.
Yes. But that concept is, as soon as that is released, as soon as you get that official offer, if I'm Auburn University, Jacob, your dream school is Auburn, I give you that official visit or that official scholarship, essentially, on August 1st, we can go ahead and come to a deal and you can sign with Auburn right now.
I love it.
And so that brings up so many conversations of what does this do to the word commitment? Is this something, again, give us a call, 334-321-1390. Is this something you would want to see so you don't see kids commit and flip and commit and flip, and then on signing day you have absolutely no idea where this kid's going to go because he has all six of his hats that he committed to on the desk in front of him? Or does this draw even more confusion? Does this give even more gray area from the standpoint of, okay, well, if a coach is fired, or what does that mean if a kid wants to break it? What does that mean if we're for NIL purposes? Can he start making NIL as a junior in high school if he keeps his commitment? Things like that. Are you able to commit but not sign? There's so many different ways that it can go, but you feel like if this concept is going to work its way into place, which again, right now, it hasn't picked up too much steam, you feel like it could be trying to bring back what the word committed used to be.
But the thing that I look at with that is it wouldn't, the word commitment in this particular instance wouldn't be appropriate.
No, but I'm saying, but back then, your word committed is essentially what signed means today.
Gotcha.
So it's almost like they're trying to bring back what the word committed used to be.
Okay, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, yeah, you wouldn't be committed. You'd be legally bound. You'd be signed. I mean, you're sealed, signed, and delivered.
Unless there's ways to commit but not sign, which, again,
which would just be a normal verbal commitment graphic that we see anyway. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just the whole professional sports model where, rather than, you know, Travis Kelce saying, yeah, I'm committed to you, Kansas City, you guys got me, I'm not going anywhere. Do you think the Kansas City Chiefs front office was cool with that? If Patrick Mahomes walked in and said, hey, I don't want to play anywhere else, I like you guys, I'm cool, we don't need anything on paper. Heck no. The Kansas City organization said, yeah, we'll take your John Henry right here, your John Hancock right here. We'll take your name on this dotted line. Thank you very much. Because that's how professional businesses work. And that's what college athletics are becoming. And so I hate it because it would get rid of a lot of the recruitment process. But man, if you're 17 years old and you're a five-star and you're the top receiver in the country and you want to go play at Ohio State and your mind is set on that and you and the Buckeyes have a deal in place that your camp has come to an agreement to, meaning you, your family, your legal representation, and the same thing on Ohio State side, and you guys are ready to go, make it happen. Cool. Let's go. Where you're going to see issues here, unfortunately, is you'll have somebody and multiple somebodies that sign contracts, right? And then they're going to be like, I think I actually changed my mind.
Yeah.
And
it.
You'll have legal problems with that. You'll have legal things of, oh, they didn't pay me this or they're backing out of it. You'll have those, but I'm saying just a change of heart, right?
Yeah.
And as unfortunate as that would be, tough.
Don't sign.
Welcome to the real world. Welcome to it being an adult, because guess what? You are now. You put your name on a piece of paper, you are an adult. So, yeah, there would be some bad situations there, but I think it would do more good than bad.
There would be a couple of the one-off, the Diego Pavio or the Nico Iamaleava situations,
right,
when it comes down to things like this. But you talk about, I mean, if your idea is to secure financial situations and things like that, I mean, if that's where you want to go, what more could you ask for?
Entry clauses are in there too, man. Whew. We're going towards that route. Just be ready for that. So you never know. I guess we'll have to see how it goes. We'll take a break, come back, and talk about the Georgia Bulldogs with Jordan Hill. He joins us next.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us. And we get to the phone lines now to welcome in our usual Wednesday guest at 2:30. He writes for Dogs 247, covering the Georgia Bulldogs in Athens. Our man Jordan Hill is with us right now. Man, I'm sure the fans are getting hyped up and starting to buzz a little bit more over there in Athens as we get closer to the start of the season.
No doubt about it. I appreciate you guys having me back on. And I was just looking, 16 days until Auburn plays, 17 days until Georgia plays. Still got a little ways to go, but fellas, I think we're going to make it.
Well, there's so much to get to in terms of the storylines coming out of Georgia fall camp. Believe they had a scrimmage last Saturday, have another one coming up this Saturday. We'll get your thoughts on all of that here as we go. But in the initial AP poll, Georgia ranked number 5 in the preseason AP poll. And around here, we're not the biggest fans of preseason polls, Jordan, but overall, fans' reactions to Georgia coming in at number 5 behind Clemson, Ohio State, Penn State, and Texas.
I was pretty pleased with the Junkyard, our message board. I thought they were pretty reasonable about Georgia being 5. I think that for the most part, what I've seen fan reaction, that a lot of people think that's reasonable. That's very much in the thick of the national title hunt, which I think a lot of fans around the program, that's sort of their expectation, that this team will contend for a championship and have a chance to make the playoff for the second straight year. So, yeah, I think that, you know, those are sort of the usual suspects among those teams in front of them. The teams I'm really interested in, Ohio State, how do they defend that national title given what they've lost, breaking in a new quarterback, but bringing back Jeremiah Smith, and Clemson. I'm really impressed with the defense, the guys they have coming back, several guys who could wind up being first-round picks. So I think that that is more than fair for Georgia when it comes to being 5th. It's very clear they are seen as one of the teams to beat. And I think even with the questions, especially breaking in a new quarterback, I think that's more than fair to have them there to start the season.
as of right now, with that preseason AP poll, Georgia has 5 ranked games on the schedule as it stands. On the road at number 24, Tennessee. Home against number 8, Alabama. At home against number 21, Ole Miss. The neutral site game with 15 ranked Florida. And then hosting number 1, Texas. Do you think that will grow or shrink by the time Georgia gets to all these said games? And then kind of what do you feel the flexibility could be in terms of Georgia rising and falling in the AP poll as the season goes along?
Well, the thing, when you look at it from the Georgia perspective, if they can get through that week 3 game against Tennessee, win at Tennessee, I think that, starting 3-0, they'll probably be in a good spot. And I think even if they drop a couple on the way, you're probably looking at them being top 15, probably the lowest in the top 15 as they work their way through the season. And yeah, I mean, looking at the teams that could wind up being ranked, I mean, I think Auburn is a very obvious one. If they're able, I don't put a ton into just one game, but I feel like we'll learn so much about Auburn in that season opener at Baylor. And if they're able to beat, I think it's a really good Baylor team, I think that puts them in a good position to start the year with a little bit of momentum and wind up in that top 25. So you look at Georgia's schedule, some of those teams that you would expect to be ranked and to stay ranked for the majority of the season. Texas and Alabama, I think Ole Miss has a really good chance as well. But, seeing how Tennessee plays with a new quarterback, seeing how high they can rise up, Auburn getting in the mix, Florida is the team on Georgia's schedule I have the most questions about, just because they've had several guys banged up in the lead-up to this season. Still don't know a ton about DJ Lagway because he's been battling through injury. So they're at a good spot right now when it comes to these teams that are ranked. I think you could see a few more work their way in the top 25 once we get this thing going.
We've talked a lot about it here, and being a Georgia native myself, I've talked with a lot of buddies about Sanford Stadium getting that night game because you feel like it's been forever. The last one I actually went to was an Auburn-Georgia night game where I don't remember much about it, but I remember Todd Gurley returning a touchdown back, but it got called back because of a hold that was non-existent. Talk a little bit about what that's felt through the fan base so far, again, Georgia and Alabama, and how much that night game is going to mean for the community and for Athens.
Yeah, there was a run here in Athens where Georgia just weren't getting very many big home games, period, and it felt like the night games are few and far between. I'm trying to remember, I think it was the 2022 season. They might have had one night game that year, and they may not have had any when it was all said and done. So you look at that Alabama game, it's one that's going to be a really big test, really, for both teams. And I think, I don't like saying must win for Georgia, but you look at, Kirby Smart, the success he's had, no one's doubting what he's accomplished. But the one knock is he's just struggled to beat Alabama year after year. And I think there was a lot of hope last year that Georgia could break through with Kalen DeBoer now the head coach. Now, albeit, you had to go to Tuscaloosa, and it didn't work out for Georgia. They made it interesting and rallied back, but couldn't get it done in the end. So I think that this is as close to a must-win for Georgia in a regular season game as it gets. I think the expectations, I think having the chance to play them at home, this will be the first time in 10 years that Georgia and Alabama have played in Athens. I think it's a big opportunity, and it's not going to be easy. And, I fully expect it to be a 4-quarter battle between two teams that I think are capable of winning the SEC. So, big opportunity, and I have no doubt that the fans are going to show up and show out. They want to try to affect this game and help Georgia any way they can.
17 days until Marshall comes between the hedges to take on the Georgia Bulldogs. You mentioned a scrimmage that happened this past Saturday, another one upcoming this weekend. What were some of the biggest highlights from that scrimmage, or what did the scrimmage in general look like? Was it all the ones against the ones or ones in the twos? And then what did the media learn about what happened in that scrimmage on Saturday?
Yeah, a good mix of different groups and different, first string, second string, and toward the end they did some situational work. I think the biggest takeaways, I think Georgia's in a really good spot when it comes to their running back room. That was a question going into the offseason after losing Trevor Etienne, but, Nate Frazier has been a steady force. Roderick Robinson, I think, has done a good job coming back from injury. Chauncey Bowens has probably been the breakout player of fall camp, a redshirt freshman that I think is poised to play quite a bit. Now, they haven't gotten a full look at Illinois transfer Josh McCray. He was dealing with some an illness to start fall camp, so he's kind of playing from behind. But even throwing in Bo Walker, the true freshman, that's made some plays along the way, and Cash Jones, who played quite a bit last year, I think they feel really good about their running back committee. I think you're going to see a lot of backs involved. Hearing fantastic things about the wide receivers. Noah Thomas had a big afternoon in that scrimmage, had a wild touchdown at one point. London Humphreys had about a 50-yard catch at one point. Colby Young continues to impress. They have done a good job of reloading a room that might have been the most disappointing for Georgia last year. Led the nation in drops, just was very inconsistent, wasn't able to capitalize on some big opportunities. And then, you know, I would shout out to the position that we're going to be paying attention to very closely when they have their second scrimmage on Saturday, the battle at strong safety. They're still trying to figure out who will start opposite of KJ Bolden. We've gotten a lot of Ja'Cory Thomas, who's a senior and a guy that's been around the program for a while. But in that first scrimmage, Adrian Maddox, a UAB transfer, got a lot of time with the first team, and based on everything I was told, handled it pretty well. So I think this is a battle to watch, and one that probably won't be decided by the time we get to the start of the season. Seeing Adrian Maddox, seeing Ja'Cory Thomas, and then Zion Branch, the USC transfer as well. So a lot of positive, I thought, coming out of that scrimmage, and probably more importantly than anything, Georgia came out of it pretty healthy, which is really all you can ask for at this time of year.
We're talking with Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 here on ESPN 106.7 in Auburn and Opelika. So the scrimmage coming up this weekend, will you guys have access to that to be able to be there and watch it in its entirety?
No. We will do what we can to find out, but we don't have the red carpet rolled out quite like Hugh Freeze done for you guys in Auburn. So it'll be a lot of piecing together what happened. We will not be on hand for that one.
Okay, so I guess I'll leave this more open-ended or talking about the fans in particular, and of course you guys monitoring your message boards and things. Is there one particular spot or maybe a play style or something that the fans have been asking for that maybe hasn't been answered yet from this Georgia football team? I know we're still a couple of weeks away from the start of the season, but any of those concerns or things the fans have been asking for that they just don't quite have the answer to yet?
Well, I think the biggest thing has been sort of a rallying cry around this program. They want to run the ball better this year, and it was sort of hard to believe last year. You know, Georgia finished the season 15th in the SEC in rushing yards per game. By far the worst numbers, the worst mark of the Kirby Smart era, and I would imagine that is the worst number Georgia's put up in the modern era. And, I mean, they've talked about it multiple times. We talked to Auburn High alum Drew Bobo yesterday, mm-hmm. and he said that, you know, the thing that they've talked about since the start of fall camp is we got to run the ball better. And, you know, just based on what I've heard to this point, I think they're making good progress there. I think the big question right now is just settling the offensive line. They've still got a battle going on at right guard with Daniel Calhoun, Michael Ooney, Juan Gaston, a true freshman, trying to figure out who will be that starting right guard. But they have made it a point that they are not satisfied with how they ran the football last year, that, you know, it was not – to the standard that Georgia has, and, you know, they set the bar very high. So I think that's what we want to see really out of that second scrimmage. Is there some explosive plays? What are they able to do on the ground? Can they get those guys going at a consistent pace? If they do that, and you couple that with what I think has been a very promising passing game, what they've been able to do through the air, I think things bode well for the Georgia offense as a whole going into the season.
And before we let you go, I want to ask you one quick thing on the basketball side of things, as you do cover Georgia basketball as well. Saw that they announced that Georgia will be playing against Xavier on Friday, November 21st in the Shriners Children's Charleston Classic. That's a mouthful. My goodness. Shriners Children's Charleston Classic is what Georgia will be playing in. First game of that tournament is Georgia versus Xavier, November 21st, late game on 9 p.m. What a great game between the Dogs and the Musketeers.
Yeah, really excited to see this tournament and how it plays out. Georgia, Xavier, West Virginia, Clemson. You know, I had some folks on our board kind of wondering why we didn't see Georgia Clemson and West Virginia Xavier be the matchups just because of sort of the regionality, and I guess they're kind of hoping to see that in the finals of the tournament. But, you know, really fascinating to see this matchup. Georgia played Xavier two seasons ago. The first round of the NIT, Georgia won it by just a couple of points. But, you know, a new era at Xavier with Richard Pitino taking over, you know, with Sean Miller going on to Texas. So really interested to see that. And then, you know, seeing that Sunday game, be very interested to see either team that Georgia plays, you know, whether it be Clemson. Very interesting, not only because that's a rivalry and they play quite a bit, but you got R.J. Godfrey, who spent a year at Georgia, transferred back to Clemson where he had been for a minute. And then even if it's West Virginia, you know, Seth Hodge comes over from North Texas, had done a good job there, taking over after a pretty successful 1 year for the previous coach who went on to Indiana. So I will see if I can maybe weasel my way into a trip to Charleston. Georgia plays Charlotte that Saturday. So we'll see if we can get creative with the travel budget and see what happens. But even if we're watching this one from home, these will be two of Georgia's better non-conference games this season, and I think that they'll deliver.
Jordan, we appreciate you, my friend, always hopping on the show and talking with us each and every week about the Georgia Bulldogs. You're telling me you're going to pick Georgia football taking on Charlotte compared to Georgia basketball in this tournament? Come on, man. I know you want to take a better trip than that.
You know, they should have been a little, you know, worked with us a little on that basketball schedule. That 9 p.m. on that Friday, man, that makes it kind of hard for that back and forth. But maybe if Georgia, if they beat Xavier, maybe I can go football Saturday, basketball Sunday. That would be a pretty nice close to the weekend.
I would say so, no doubt about it. Well, man, you do an incredible job covering the Georgia Bulldogs. And like I mentioned, we always appreciate having you on and love talking to you each and every week. Tell people where they can find you and all your work and if they're looking for more information on the Georgia Bulldogs.
Definitely, dogs247.com, on Twitter at Jordan Davis Hill, on Twitter at dogs247. Got that 50% off sale still going on as part of fall camp. This would be a great time to sign up. We'll get all the intel we can find from the second scrimmage. And first scrimmage, they allowed some McGill Society donors to be there. Some folks that were on our board were able to watch it live. It's going to be a lot harder to get information this time around, so you'll want to subscribe and be ready to read what we find out from Saturday. But also, Junkyard Dogcast podcast. We've got content up talking about that latest scrimmage and getting ready for the next one. So busy time of year, but best time of year. And before we know it, guys, we'll be marking our calendars, putting in some TV times, kickoff times, and getting ready to get this thing going.
My man, appreciate you as always. Enjoy the rest of the week, and we'll talk to you again next Wednesday.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks to you. That's Jordan Hill, Dogs247. Again, check him out wherever if you want to go check that out. Again, dogs247.com for all of your Georgia coverage.
One more time?
Dude, I want to clarify this before I say what I'm going to say. I think Shriners Children's Hospital is amazing. They are incredible. They do fantastic work. It's a nonprofit. It's one of those things that, I mean, people that are involved in that are meant for bigger things. I mean, they're incredible people.
We also need to preface that you were doing that Google search right as you were asking the question.
The Shriners Children's Charleston Classic. There's got to be a better name for a basketball tournament. That is brutal.
The SCCC, baby.
I mean, Shriners Children's Charleston. Any broadcaster that's got to be there that week, good luck.
If only, like, College of Charleston plays in it.
Shriners Children's Invitational would even be okay. Shriners Children's Classic would be okay. But Shriners Children's Charleston Classic, my goodness. I talk for a living and I couldn't get
that. Where College of Charleston takes on Charleston Southern.
Yeah, my goodness. Well, that was rough. Okay, we'll take a final break here in hour number one, come back and wrap it up. We'll get into hour number two. I have bad news when we come back. I'll tell you that as we wrap up hour number one.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app. We'll be right back.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Got a couple of minutes before we take our bottom or the top of the hour break, rather. We'll come back and have a jam-packed hour number two. And I said I have bad news when we come back, and I do, unfortunately. We have a jam-packed hour number two, but there's no guest in there because Daryl Dapprich, Double D Wednesday, has had to cancel. He let me know this morning, plenty of time. We're not talking bad, just saying there's no Daryl today. He will be back next week. He confirmed he's good to go next week. Had something come up. So he's one of those that he always lets me know. So again, no Double D today. But we are going to fill that with good content in hour number two. We'll talk about some of those underrated, overrated teams in the AP poll for the top 25 since 2014. We'll talk about that a little bit. Also, Auburn and Houston is now confirmed in the basketball world, so we'll talk about that game coming up in hour number two. Just kind of some generic college football stuff. So it's going to be a fun hour number two. But yeah, no Daryl Dapprich today. So I know. I'm sorry.
The best part about it is that means that the guests are now you on the phone lines, which we will talk a whole lot about. But yeah, the AP poll's most overrated and underrated teams since 2014. We tried talking a little bit about it yesterday. I haven't dove into the most underrated teams. I looked at a couple of them, but didn't look at the whole top 25 list. But the most overrated teams since 2014 might just be the worst list I've ever looked at.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. So that's what is. That's what's in hour number two. I just saw something on social media just while we have 30 seconds or so. Tennessee Athletics going back to Adidas. Yeah, they were with Nike for quite some time and just signed a 10-year deal with Adidas. So all Tennessee Athletics will be a part of Adidas now for the next decade.
You feel like that?
See, you like Adidas, and I'm on Adidas.
I feel like they've made a big step up. I have to be a fan of Adidas because I was sponsored by Adidas, so I have to be a fan. I don't have the choice.
Okay.
But no, I feel like their equipment has made a very big jump. I remember when they first, made their way into the college football landscape with A&M, Texas A&M, and their new jerseys and everything, and all the different sleeves and everything, and that was always really, really cool. Do you feel like that benefits them more on the basketball court or on the football field? Or I don't feel like it does anything with the baseball.
No, not really. I mean, probably basketball. I mean, Adidas has Indiana for basketball, so that's a pretty big basketball school to be sponsored for. When I think of Adidas, I think soccer because they're so heavy on the soccer side of things.
And the gross Adidas warm-ups.
Ooh.
You know what I'm talking about? That big logo? Yeah.
Oh, boo. Well, good thing we're not Tennessee fans. All right. Hour number one's in the book. Stick around. We got a whole lot more coming up in hour number two.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two. During On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us as we get underway in the second 60 minutes of the show. If you missed any of the first hour, we talked some We talked some Auburn football with Baylor, right, as that matchup just continues to build in buzz and momentum and all the things, right? So we talked about that game and some of the other games in week one that we'll continue to hype up and continue to break down and predict and things like that as we get closer. Also talked to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 about the Georgia Bulldogs, who had a scrimmage last Saturday and have one coming up this Saturday as well. So we talked to him about all the biggest updates out of fall practice there. And so if you missed any of that from hour number one, you can check it out on the podcast version of the show at ESPNAU.com.
Here in hour number two, we're kicking it off talking a little bit about the AP Polls voters' most overrated teams since 2014. We're also going to talk a little bit about the most underrated teams according to the AP poll voters top 25. We're going to talk a little bit of Auburn and Houston basketball as that Battleground 2K25 has been confirmed. We're going to talk about that rematch of the Final Four teams. Take you down a little trip of memory lane to about November of last year when everybody of Auburn and everybody in the college basketball world was welcomed to Tahad Pettiford and everything that he gave to the Auburn Tigers in year one. What is he going to look like in year two? What is this game going to look like in year two with Kelvin Sampson and Bruce Pearl, the good buddies taking each other on in Birmingham? We got some news about some punt returners, some kick returners, and all of that here in hour number two. Again, no Daryl Daprich joining us in hour number two. So the phone lines are open for the entire second hour. If you would like to be a part of the conversation, you can. It'll connect you to the phone lines to us. You can be on the phone lines with us. You can be on the line at 334-321-1390. Again, that number, 334-321-1390. The text box is always open as well at 334-784-1067. Any quick hitters, any one questions you have that you would like for us to answer. Man, we've had a lot of engagement so far through the first 2 days. It's picked up yet again today, and man, we're excited to be able to dive into hour number two.
Yep, and we're going to do that here in just a moment. Again, talking overrated teams, underrated teams in the last decade or so in college football, and a lot of other things as well. But we get to the phone lines to start hour number two at 334-321-1390. You're on the line. Who are we speaking with?
Hey, Spectre.
What's up, Spectre? It's been a while, my man.
Yeah, this is my time of year, buddy. That's so get
right.
used to it.
We're here and prepared, man. What's up?
Yeah, I'm ready to tell you like it is.
And hold nothing back, my friend.
And that's right. Listen, I want to talk about the upcoming game about Alabama and Florida State.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm making a prediction that Florida State's going to whoop them.
Oh, and whoop them.
Yeah, whoop them good because our man is the offensive coordinator now. He does what he does best at offensive coordinator.
Gus Malzahn and beat a team he's not supposed to?
That's right. he had a pretty good record against Alabama, as you know.
One of the better records against Alabama in recent memory, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm he's going to kick it off. He's going to kick off the season. You know, FSU, they beat the LSU last year in the first game of the season, right?
No, you're thinking of USC, I believe.
No, it was a couple years ago.
USC that did it.
Yeah, but Florida State did it a couple years ago because remember they scored with like a second left, but the extra point got blocked.
Yeah, yeah.
That was last year was Florida State taking on Georgia Tech in Dublin, Ireland,
and Georgia Tech got that win.
Yeah. Well, okay, I was a year off. Okay, but yeah, I think Gus is going to do it.
You think so? Is that more, let me ask you, Spectre, is that more, I'm assuming it's more on Florida State rather than Alabama, right? Are you saying Florida State's going to beat Alabama or Alabama will lose to Florida State, if that makes sense?
Well, you're going to have, offensively, I guess you could say that Florida State's going to beat them because Gus Malzahn's going to kick it up on them.
Sure.
And, I think FSU is going to beat Alabama. I don't think Alabama is going to lose the game because they didn't play well. But, you know.
Yeah.
I guess you could say that anytime somebody loses, they didn't play well.
Sure. And I think, too, you look on the flip side of that, which I always love to do in these types of matchups. What will Alabama's offense look like with still some questions at the quarterback spot and running back and things like that compared to whatever the heck Florida State's going to do defensively? I think that may be the matchup, too, Spectre, is the one that we may not highlight on the front end.
Yeah, you're right. you know, I got something else I want to talk to you about. I've been hearing all the pundits all summer long, and my expectation for Auburn, I always have coming into the year that they're going to do better than the previous year. And so I'm keeping that, but at the same time, I'm hearing stuff like, you know, we're going to have three different play callers on first and second and third down. And is that right? Did I hear that correctly?
Yeah, you heard it right. They're the offensive assistants and Derek Nix, the offensive coordinator, had media availability on Monday, I believe. And, yeah, they said that Derek Nix calls first down, Hugh Freeze calls second down, Ken Austin calls third down, and then Hugh Freeze has the override switch whenever he wants it.
Let me ask you about this. Did Hugh Freeze ever do this before in any team, Liberty or Mississippi?
Not that I know of, but I can't 100% confirm that. But I think when he, back in the day in his bag when he was at Ole Miss, I think he had pretty good control over everything.
You know, why did we hire Hugh Freeze?
His offensive mind.
What happened the last 2 years?
I'm with you on that. I'm with you. I'm just saying. Yeah, that's where he shined when he was winning games at Ole Miss and beating Alabama back in the day.
All right, guys. I'll be talking to you more often here in the next couple of months or so.
All right. Well, we always enjoy our talk, Spectre.
All right, see you guys.
Thanks so much. 334-321-1390. Spectre, good friend and fan of the program for a long time right there. We appreciate him interacting with us as always.
Yeah, that was my fun rant yesterday. I was talking about
– Yeah, Spectre, go back and listen to the podcast yesterday. Christian got fired up for a while.
It was a fun conversation. And, again, I have a feeling that a majority of the people were in agreement with everything that was said on the show yesterday.
To what Spectre said, his expectation every year is for Auburn to be better than they were a year ago. It's not hard, hopefully. Auburn better be better than they better be better than they were last year. I tell you that, and it shouldn't be hard to make an improvement on that, right? I mean, 5-7 last year. I mean, Auburn should be better than they were last year. But what a prediction by him. I mean, to have Florida State beat Alabama in the season opener, that's incredible. I mean, he says Florida State, Christian's going to beat Alabama in the season opener, does Spectre.
Yeah, and shout out, he just called me back and said that he actually did go back and listen to it, said that he sent a text and everything, and so he agreed with it. So more and more people are picking up and agreeing. Thanks, Spectre, again. Thanks for the call and for the kind words as well. But yeah, not going to just slip up and beat Alabama. He said they're going to whoop them.
They're going to whoop them
at home, and that's going to kick off their year. And I heard that Florida State's winning the national championship. That was kind of the way that I heard it.
What is their win total, Florida State?
I think it's like 5 or 6.5.
That's so crazy, man. That's so wild to me.
Let me do some math on this.
They were just so bad last year. They were so bad.
Anywhere from 7.5 to 6.5. 6.5 is favored, -130. They're like +200 to go over.
You know what name I've seen be thrown around for that job if it doesn't happen for Norvell down there? Did you see who laid out a quote this week that said he would love to get back into coaching because he still loves it?
I mean, I remember it wasn't
not
Gruden.
No, no. No, not Gruden.
Who was it?
It was Jimbo Fisher.
I do remember. Oh, could you imagine the circle of life with that? My goodness. Would they take him back?
I don't know. My question would be, if you're Jimbo Fisher, I don't care that you still love it. Hang it up, brother man. Be done. You got paid $76 million to be fired, to be let go, to not work. You were paid $76 million to say, go away. You know what you're supposed to do in that scenario? Go away.
You're supposed to
stay away.
You're supposed to give one of the best quotes that coaches have ever given, and that was Ed Orgeron at LSU. When they said he walked in and he said, yes, sir, you want me to pack up my stuff or you want me to leave right now? Which door do you want me to leave out of? I'll shake your hand and get out right now.
And that was a third of what Jimbo Fisher got paid to leave. $76 million was his buyout.
And speaking of Florida State and LSU, that was actually the, believe it or not, man, the years are flying by. already. That was 2022, where they had that free
that
play.
That was that Monday, and that, no, was, that was the Sunday,
the Sunday night
game,
the week one game that LSU scored on the final play of the game with Jaden Daniels, but then the PAT got blocked, and Florida State won 24-23.
Dude, LSU's resume and record in
season openers. It was a 99-yard touchdown drive, too.
LSU's record in recent season openers has not been good because, again, they lost to USC. Was that, that was last year. That was 2024 that LSU got beat by USC on opening weekend. Because that was the new documentary on Netflix, the Any Given Saturday. That's how it starts. It highlights LSU losing to USC.
They've lost five straight.
They've lost five straight season openers, LSU has?
They're 92-34 overall, but with losses to Mississippi State in 2020, to UCLA in 2021, that was in Pasadena, the 38-27 loss, the Florida State loss, on the way back in Orlando, and then Southern Cal 27-20 in Las Vegas.
Golly. And there's a really good chance that goes to six in a row with a road game at Clemson. Has LSU figured out maybe they shouldn't play big-time teams week one? Maybe they should get away from that trend.
Their last win was 55-3 over Georgia Southern.
That's more like it. Maybe that's what they should start doing.
After that, holy crap, going back from...
They probably had a pretty good record.
2015 to 2002, they didn't lose. But that was Louisiana Monroe, Louisiana Lafayette, App State. They did have Washington, North Carolina, Oregon, North Texas, TCU. But, yeah, if you want Brian Kelly to...
Wow. I knew it had gotten bad. I just didn't know it was already five in a row. That's crazy, man. And, I mean, I think most people will pick them to lose against Clemson. I mean, I think at this moment right now, I'm fascinated on what people say come week one. But, God, you lose six in a row, man. That's unbelievable.
Right now, Clemson is anywhere from a 2.5 to a 4-point favorite.
I mean, that's just the home field advantage
That's a field goal right there. That's a pick'em game just about. But you give Clemson, you give Klubnik, and you give the home crowd a field goal.
No doubt. No doubt about it. Well, yeah, could you imagine Jimbo Fisher going back to Florida State? To answer your question, I don't know if they would. I don't know if he's actually been directly linked to that. I think somebody was – he did have quotes this week saying he wants to get back
in. Yeah, I do remember seeing that.
He said, I'm 59, in great shape and healthy. I've had success everywhere we've ever been.
Hmm.
I'm sorry. What? It goes on to say, the end at Texas A&M, it's unfortunate, but we also had the highest ranked team they ever had in there in 2020. Our quarterbacks got hurt. We played with first team, third team. It was hard to get play calling and guys around. Didn't pan out like we needed to, but I still love it.
You know who the quarterback was? The starter at Kentucky this year.
That was Calzada's year?
He beat Alabama.
Oh, my God. That was COVID, too.
That was when he beat Alabama.
Gosh, man. I'm just reading through this timeline of him at Texas A&M. Hired in 2018, got a 10-year, $95 million extension in 2021, and was fired 2 years later. How horrific is that?
Thankfully, Auburn's never done anything like that.
He was 45-25 at Texas A&M, and they let him go.
Which feels like it doesn't make sense from the standpoint of what the overall win-loss record was, but it was just the, man, you got to get over the 8-win hump. And it was that every single year, and you were fighting just to get to that.
Yeah, I mean, they just couldn't, they couldn't do it. They couldn't, they kept recruiting, and they had money, and they were always relevant. They just couldn't, yeah, they couldn't get over the hump. You're right. They couldn't get over where they needed to go. Think about if they had kept him, though, because when they fired him, right, when they fired him in November of 2023, we didn't have an expanded college football playoff yet.
No.
Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M now.
And NIL then was just starting to kick off.
Wow.
Obviously, you were a year and a half at that point into it, but imagine what it could have looked like right now. Obviously, I think Elko is quite happy in Aggieland, but yeah, imagine what Jimbo Fisher could have done at Texas A&M, or even at Florida State for that matter, if what today's college football was what it was back then.
For a guy like him, before we get to break, a guy like him that is still at his age, I didn't realize he was that young. For somebody like him who is a good coach, not great, good, and they're verbally, publicly saying that they want to get back into it, he'll find his way back into coaching.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he could take the
would he take like an SEC job?
Well, I was going to say he could take like the Dan Mullen route at UNLV and just go and coach again.
Yeah, because he does go in here and says, I miss the relationships with the players and things like that. I mean, you could go, yeah, you could go take a G5 job somewhere.
That's what I'm saying. How many people remember that Dan Mullen is the coach at UNLV?
Only reason I remembered, I saw him out there at their one-day media days or whatever that
right.
they had. Yeah.
But it's like, go do something like that. Go win 7 or 8 games and be a hero at one of those schools.
I'm saying take $78 million and fall off the face of the earth. That's what I'm saying to do. Golly, you could pay me $1 million and I'd find a way not to work anymore. Which I don't know if you can survive on that nowadays, but I'd find a way to do it.
You just throw all that on Auburn Moneyline and...
No, I don't partake in those activities. Let's take our first break in hour number one. I know Monopoly. We didn't get to, I know we didn't get to our overrated, underrated, but we'll just combine those in one big segment coming up at 3:30 because we're going to talk a little Auburn basketball when we come back because a big game has now been confirmed on the schedule. We'll talk about that for Bruce Pearl and the boys right after this.
This is Amber from Amber and Ian. You're listening to On the Line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we continue on here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Again, we'll get to the underrated, overrated teams in the past decade of college football coming up at 3:30. No Daryl Dapperts today. We'll pick back up with him next week here on the show. But a little Auburn basketball news where we got confirmation that the Tigers will be taking on a really, really good team close to home in the non-conference slate up in Birmingham coming up in just a couple of months.
Yeah, it's not quite the playing Houston in downtown Houston, but it's at least in the state as Auburn and Houston are playing in the Battleground 2K25 match. That is Sunday, November 16th at the BJCC in Birmingham. And, man, we remember so much about this game last year with Auburn coming from behind and Tahad Pettiford electrifying the fan base and showing exactly what the freshman was capable of. But, man, the biggest thing I remember about that game is it's something you hear in all of these Sonic blockbusters or all of the big week one games in college basketball of, man, these are two Final Four capable teams. These are two teams that could play each other a lot later on in the season. And although they didn't end up playing each other in the tournament, both teams made it to the Final Four. And so that was so cool to be able to sit back and look at that year and go, man, look at what these teams were able to accomplish so early and so late. Now both of these teams have the chance to toe the rubber once again.
And just for people who are looking at crossover schedules and things, it's a Sunday, yes, but that is also Auburn football's bye week. So keep that in mind. That is squeezed in between the trip to Vanderbilt and then the home game against Mercer. So that is the second bye week of the year for Auburn football. So if you want to travel up to Birmingham for the weekend, you can definitely do so. And I'm with you on that. I mean, that I remember watching that game. What was that, game two of the season? Is that right? Like game two or three of this past year for Auburn? And we watched it, and Auburn won that game. And we walked out of the bar that we were watching it at, and it was like,
holy cow.
Holy smokes. Auburn just won that game.
And it was not because Houston went and lost it or because they played bad. It was the fact that Auburn went on the road and behind Tahad Pettiford's 21 points, went out and won a really, really competitive game in downtown Houston against the Houston Cougars.
And so it was one of those where it was like, man, okay, this Auburn team is legit. We knew there were was talent on that team and a bunch of returning guys. We knew all of that, but it was so cool to see it that early in the season and to beat that caliber of a team. And then, as you mentioned, for Houston to go on and make the Final Four and being able to look back on it and say, yeah, Auburn clearly beat a really, really good team. Auburn was obviously a good team in itself, but yeah, that was a really fun game. And so you add this now, Auburn playing Houston, Birmingham, Sunday, November 16th. You add this to a stacked non-conference schedule already that Auburn is going to be playing. And I don't know if it's quite what last year was, but it's pretty darn close for what the Tigers get to do or what they have the chance to do in the non-conference slate this year.
I think it very easily could get up to that margin or could possibly exceed it just because by this point we knew our first two games in Maui. We knew that it was Iowa State, and we knew that it was either North Carolina or whoever else. And now you're at the point where you know all of the teams that are in the NIL Players Era Invitational in Las Vegas, but it's more of the who could you play. But I guess we have those.
We know Auburn will play Oregon and then Michigan.
Okay.
Auburn plays Oregon on the first day of that tournament on November 24th, and then they'll play Michigan on November 25th. And remember, that's not necessarily a traditional tournament.
No, that's...
Every team plays two games, and then two teams move on to the, quote, championship game, but they use a bunch of calculations and stuff to figure out who that is.
But still, yeah. I guess I forgot that that was already confirmed as well. But, yeah, the fact that it's all based off of margin of victory, points scored versus points allowed, and we've had that conversation of, okay, well, what's the equation of how long do starters play? If you're up by 20, do you keep them in because you still have to keep playing great defense to try and advance and try and make it to where you go win by 28 because those 8 points could just mean that much more. And again, regards to this Auburn and Houston playing in Birmingham, there's a website on, or I guess a link rather, on auburntigers.com where fans can go ahead and sign up for the general presale with tickets that begin on Tuesday, August 19th at 10 a.m.
There you go. So, I mean, a really fun game. And look, Houston is probably the greatest threat to make it back to the Final Four this year. I think them and Florida are both right there on collision courses to get back. I mean, Houston is pretty much like in the top three of any preseason ranking that you look at right now.
Houston's now the number one overall seed in the bracketology.
And Lenardi's updated bracketology. Yeah, that's right. I mean, Kelvin Sampson's such a good coach, and they're such a well-oiled machine there in Houston for that basketball program. And so, look, Auburn may or may not win this game. And you're talking the first 2 weeks of the season in this game, same way it was last year. I mean, this is early for this brand new Auburn team to try and figure it out. And so you may not win this game, but you're going to learn a lot about who you are and what you got and maybe what you don't when you play Houston on November 16th.
Yeah, last year you knew Jahni Broome was coming back. You had a couple of these other pieces in Miles Kelly. And again, you heard about the phenom Tahad Pettifer, but it was much going to be how is everything going to mesh with those younger guys. Now you're at the point of, okay, you know about the sophomore Tahad Pettifer. And you know about some of these other guys playing other Power Four or playing other SEC basketball games, but what the heck is everything going to look like? Again, you said it. You might not win it, but what you are going to do is you're going to learn a whole lot about it. You're going to learn a whole lot about it playing one of the best teams in the country.
The narrative we had last year that Auburn's record may not be good going into SEC play isn't a bad thing and not overreact. That never came to fruition because Auburn won most of those games. I think this season there may be a little bit more of a threat of that happening for Auburn to drop some of those non-con games, but still take a lot away from it by the time January rolls around. So looking forward to it, Auburn and Houston on the hardwood, November 16th in Birmingham. We take our bottom of the hour break, and when we come back, the most overrated and underrated teams in the last decade of college football.
Earlier on Clinton and Friends.
Who is any good in the NBA now? Let's take out the Oklahoma City Thunder. They're obviously good. The Lakers are pretty decent. Timberwolves are pretty decent. On the Eastern Conference side, Boston banged out. Pacers banged out. The Bucks, okay. The Cavaliers are still hanging around, but we don't even really know what they can do because they haven't ascended to the heights that we thought they would be at.
Clinton and Friends.
Mornings 9 to 11 on ESPN 106.7. We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here. Sorry. These lists are terrible.
They're so bad.
These lists are so – and I looked at them once or twice, like, getting ready for the show, and it's like – I look back through, and it's like, were these people on drugs?
Yeah.
Taking and making these lists?
And this is AP poll voters. that voted on the top 25 most overrated and underrated teams since 2014. And again, this is a conversation. This is not the 2016 Auburn Tigers. This is just the college football teams as a whole since 2014. And when you look at...
Welcome back to On the Line here on ESPN 106.7, by the way.
Sorry.
I'm Jacob, he's Christian. We appreciate you being with us.
When you look at the first two or three on each of these, you feel like it's, okay, I somewhat agree with that. You look and kind of piece around, and you're like, okay, I see where our number 11 is. They could be anywhere from, you know, 8 or 9, or they could be at 12 and 13. Then you look at other teams, and it's like, how the heck are they considered overrated, or how the heck are they underrated? So which one do you want to start with as we work our way rather quickly?
I don't know, yeah, because we're combining these two lists in the same segment. I mean, when I think of overrated teams in the last decade, I think of teams that constantly get hyped up, teams that constantly get praised, and then constantly underperform. When I think of underrated teams in the last decade, I think of the exact opposite. Teams that don't get talked about. Teams that don't have expectations, but then exceed the very little ones that they have. When I look at these lists, I don't think these people took that idea into consideration. I think they just said, who are the teams we hear about the most, and who are the teams we never hear about? That's what I think they went into this list with, which makes a little bit more sense, but even that ideology is incorrect in my opinion.
You almost just went on X or on social media and said, what team is made fun of the most? And it was like, okay, there's one, there's two, there's three.
That's pretty much it.
And then the other ones are, what teams that you don't hear about that did good?
But even and then, half of these teams on the underrated list haven't done squat.
No. Well, we'll start with overrated then, because that has a little bit more tie to the area that we live in. Well, I guess, again, we'll kind of just pick and choose some of the teams to really talk about. But 1, 2, and 3, and 1 being, again, I guess the most overrated team since 2014, number 25, the 25th most overrated team. So you want to be low on this, or you don't even want to be on it, but on underrated, you feel like the higher up you are, the better that you have been. 1, 2, and 3, Southern Cal is listed as the most overrated team since 2014, according to the AP poll voters. I feel like I can get behind that at least enough of I'm not going to completely tell you that you are wrong if you bring me an argument.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say the last decade, that's fair. They're up there. You could switch teams around if you wanted to, but
number two, we didn't have to make it very far.
No.
The Auburn Tigers are listed as the second most overrated team since 2014, and taking off the orange and blue glasses, or I guess putting them on at first, I was like, oh, well, of course they picked 2014 as the year on after you just played. They didn't pick 2010. They picked not even 2013. They picked right after, but I think that's because it was the decade, this past decade. Yeah, Auburn is listed as the second most overrated team since 2014. Texas A&M is the third most overrated team since 2014. Those three teams, again, okay, yeah, I can get behind that. You bring some sort of an argument to the table, and I'm not going to completely tell you that you're idiotic and wrong.
I think Texas A&M needs to be number one. I mean, that team and program is the most overrated team and program that college football maybe has ever seen.
Southern Cal is more of the, they could be good, but it's, you know, A&M's at the point every year of number one recruiting class, number three recruiting class. Man, this team could win the national championship. Then all of a sudden it's late October and it's, oh, why are they 6-4?
Right, exactly. Auburn and USC are kind of in the same boat of like, man, you guys should be good this year. You should be good every year, but you're not. And so totally agree with that. But Texas A&M is by far the most overrated football program in the last 15 years, more than this list even gives credit for.
You work your way on to number four. And I told you, number
this
one,
is absurd.
Number one, two, and three, you feel like there's some sort of argument there. Number again, you can bring your conversational bits, you bring your bullet points, and I'll tell you, okay, yeah, I can see where you made this list. Number four is where the ship refuses to sail any further, because it says that the LSU Tigers are the fourth most overrated team since 2014.
That's dumb. That is bad. You're telling me that a team that's won a national title in the last 5 years is overrated and the hype isn't legit? The hype isn't real when LSU football starts a brand new season? How is that even possible?
They're 87-40 with a national championship.
I don't think that's overrated to me. I think that's right around where they're supposed to be if you're LSU. They would probably like to have another title in there somewhere if it's LSU speaking. But
I mean, yes.
The hype is warranted. The hype around LSU is always warranted.
And it usually,
always.
You're sitting there looking at it. They have one losing record, and that's 6-7 in 2021. But other than that, 9-3, 8-4, 9-4, 10-3, 15-0, 10-4, 10-3. I understand that it's from the standpoint of winning a national championship, they might be considered overrated from the standpoint that you don't get to that hump, but it's not every single year of, man, this team is going to win the national championship, and all of a sudden they go 7-5.
Yeah, no, I agree with you and disagree with the fact that LSU is considered one of the most overrated teams in college football. Somebody sent us a text in the text box at 334-784-1067, which is open, by the way, asking about Auburn being on this list in terms of overrated, and they asked, when was the last time Auburn was even ranked? And the answer to that question is 2021. That's the last time Auburn football had a number next to its name. When they were ranked for most of the year in 2021. It fluctuated around a little bit, but they were ranked most of the time. They didn't make it higher than... they were ranked 12th at the end of the year in week 11, it says. But yeah, 2021 was the last time that Auburn was ranked. So there you go. That'll make you feel good.
I feel like that. I mean, that works its way. Yeah, right into that conversation. Those are pretty much the only ones. I mean, Wisconsin is number 5. I feel like I don't even know why they're completely on the list, because what's been the expectation
right
over the past decade? Truly, Florida State at 6, Oregon at 7, OU at 8, Miami at 9, and Michigan at 10. Another team that just won a national championship.
I don't think Oregon should be on this list. Oregon at least delivers. Oregon's always there, or at least in the past decade they've been there.
I feel like Oregon's on this list because of the running joke of their logo is how many national championships they've won. But
Miami should be higher on this list.
I agree with that.
Miami could be number 2 in my opinion. Either you could go Texas A&M and Miami and then Florida State. I think those three teams back to back to back could be the most overrated teams in the last decade.
11, Stanford, North Carolina 12. Why is North Carolina on this? UCLA at 13. Again, you feel like
Stanford? Nobody cares about Stanford. Nobody talks about them.
Yeah, 11, 12, and 13 you feel like are... Well,
that's a waste of space
on the
graphic.
They threw logos on there.
Literally.
This is when the true argument comes back once again of what the heck are you on to make this sort of list? Georgia is at 14.
Again, overrated teams in the last decade of college football.
Since 2014. Or Georgia is at 14. Alabama is at 15, and the Clemson Tigers are at 16.
Those teams have how many national titles in this time period? 4?
If not more.
No, they got more than that. Georgia's got 2.
Clemson has 2. Alabama has at least, they have 2 as well? Oh, gosh.
Several national titles from those three teams combined in the last 10 years. How are they overrated? This list is dumb. This is making me mad. This list makes me mad. And then just to rapid fire some of those again quickly, Utah's on there. Notre Dame should be on there until recent success.
Alabama has 3. So there are 7 of the 10.
And they're overrated.
And those 14, 15, and 16 are overrated.
This is,
I think, another list on the last team on here that we need to highlight.
Rage bait, man.
Texas Longhorns at 21. If we're talking about a decade as a whole, we sat there and talked about it for a decade of
Texas is back.
Every
baby.
Single year of Texas is back, and Sam Ellinger, after winning a bowl game, we're back. And then all of a sudden, the very next year hit, and it was like, oh, wait, maybe they're not. Like,
Nebraska's again, on this list, but take them off. Ain't nobody. People have learned their lesson on Nebraska. They quit having expectations for Nebraska 15 years
ago. What about your other favorite team, Notre Dame, who's at 19?
They should be higher, no doubt, but at least they've started playing for national titles. So you got to give them a little bit of credit there. Ohio State's 25th on this list. They have a national title, so just shut up, man. Yeah. This list is
so stupid. There's the overrated, and I don't know how much better it gets when you go to the underrated side of things.
Yeah.
Again, this is the first time I've truly looked at
this
as I'm
talking
on
this
right
one.
Now. Okay. I like where number one is. Again, I didn't hate where 1, 2, and 3 was. I don't dislike where number one at BYU.
Yeah, I don't hate that.
Because I think a wideout at BYU, a night game, I think it's very scary. They're always 8-4. 9-3, but you don't hear anything about them.
Yeah, and they're uber talented. Their fan base is insane. They're wild. They are so dedicated to that football program that they
and basketball now as well.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have more money than God himself. But I don't love Northwestern being at 2.
No.
There's nothing underrated or overrated about Northwestern.
You hear that Notre Dame won, or sorry, Northwestern won, and it's, oh, okay. We hear that Northwestern lost, and it's, oh, okay.
Northwestern sucks. Like, who gives the time of day to put any stock into what the heck is happening at Northwestern? Nobody cares. So I don't consider them underrated because they don't deserve more love. They don't deserve more attention. Sorry, you're the bottom feeder of the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Can't be overrated or underrated if you're not rated at all.
Yeah, if half the country doesn't even know you exist. I think Boise State is an unfair one because I think they get quite a bit of attention, especially now, recently. Yeah. They're at 3rd on this underrated list.
I mean, people
talk about Boise State.
When you just produce the best coaches to ever walk the earth, I mean, you feel like they need a little bit more recognition.
Doesn't get any better than previous coaches at Boise State.
No, that's what I'm saying. And I think this is a little unwarranted, and a little unfair just because they've talked about them a little bit more. But before the teams made the switch of the conference realignments and things like that, they weren't talked about as much. And again, that was even when Brian Harsin was going 9-3 or 10-2.
I just always feel like there's always a group of people that talk about Boise State.
How much of that is because of the field? I feel like that's more than you would think.
Seems like they always have a player or two that people are excited about, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. This is me giving respect to Boise State, saying that I don't think they are underrated. I think they get coverage and back it up most of the time, I think. Some of these other teams on here, I don't know.
Why is Iowa 5th?
God, talk about a boring program. Talk about a bland program in Iowa football.
Might get worse at number 6.
Their punters score more points than their quarterbacks do.
Yeah. Indiana at 6.
That is outrageous. That team is horrible.
Although last year, went to the college football playoff, haven't won a bowl game in, 30 years?
Before the season last year, Indiana football in the history of college football had more losses than any other team in the history of the sport before last year. How in the world is that considered underrated? No, they were properly rated, sir.
It's okay. It gets worse. Mississippi State is the 8th ranked most underrated team in college football in the last decade.
That's where I get back to, what went into making this list? Like, is this a they deserve more attention or deserve more credit?
This is like referees where
they haven't earned it.
They make calls, and then they don't have to be interviewed or questioned after the game. Like, we need somebody on this post right here. We need to be able to slide right, and everybody sits there and is like, okay, this is what went down into making this sort of list.
Again, what has Mississippi State done to say we deserve more credit? The media, the fans haven't talked about us enough.
They're 65-56 since 2014.
That's disgusting. That's horrible.
Wasn't
2014 there? No, never mind.
They went 10-3.
Yeah, that was their year.
Went 9-4 in 2017, 9-4 in 2022, and other than that, losing years everywhere around.
Yeah, I don't understand all that. Some of these other teams as underrated. UCF is not underrated. Can we stop, please? They are not underrated. They had their moment in the sun. People gave them love. They hopped on the hype train. Gus Malzahn goes down there. They lose football games. He left. Nobody. UCF is not an underrated. Tulane is not underrated. Are you kidding me? What are we doing on this?
What about the team in front of it? Kentucky.
This is a disaster.
Kentucky, who's 59-53 since 2014.
I look at Tulane. Everybody is scared to death of Tulane, man.
Tulane and you feel like Boise State are the two G5 teams that you look at, and it's like, okay, those are the teams that we don't want to play.
And SMU was in that group, too, before they joined the ACC. Absolutely, you didn't want to play them. Cincinnati was the same way before they joined the Big 12, and they're on this list. Cincinnati made a college football playoff in 2014, the first year of its existence. What are we doing, man? This list was pure rage bait, and it absolutely worked.
Weirdly enough, Tulane is only 66-61 since 2014.
I thought that would have been better.
I would as well.
You still don't want to play them.
No.
I don't want to play them.
Is that 23, the 23rd most underrated team since 2014? Is that one that we agree with just because of the recent 3 or 4 years under Lane Kiffin of
maybe
now that you beat Georgia last year and you feel like you've been a game away for the past 3 years of making the college football playoff. And
I wonder what type of coverage Ole Miss gets outside of the SEC. Because again, that's where I'm going with this list is like, these are teams who have been underrated, under-talked about, under-discussed, under, you know what I'm saying? Like, teams that deserve more respect and credit than they're given.
Ole Miss is 76-53 since 2014.
I mean, the SEC laughs at them because they do it to themselves, but do anybody in the Big Ten care about what's happening with Ole Miss football? Does anybody in the ACC talk about Ole Miss? No. So, yeah, I'll give them that one. I'll give them Ole Miss is probably an underrated football program. In the last 10 years.
Missouri at 15.
That's disgusting. These lists are horrible. This is bad.
We need to know what went into this.
That's terrible.
The underrated has a little bit of an argument. The overrated is just pure rage bait.
Yeah, it is. It's laughable. So there you go. All right, we got to take a break. We got to move on from this. 334-321-1390 is the phone line number. If you call in now, got to make it quick because we have one short segment when we come back and we'll wrap up the Wednesday edition of the show.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line as we are about out of time, have just a couple of minutes, and been a fun show today. It's been, we've covered a lot. I was going to say it's been all over the place. We've covered a lot. We really have. We've talked about some Georgia football things, had Jordan Hill on earlier in the show. We've talked about overrated, underrated teams in college football over the last decade, a little Auburn basketball in there today.
Yeah, we talked some Auburn-Baylor to pick it up in hour number one. Yeah. We talked about what August 1st could mean in the future of college football if this thing takes up any steam of allowing recruits to sign on August 1st. You talk about overrated, underrated Auburn and Houston basketball. I guess a little bit of news on our way out of here, which we were going to talk about earlier in the show. Eric Singleton and Rayshon Pleasants have been confirmed to be the primary kick returners.
Yeah.
Eric Singleton is the primary punt returner right now with Malcolm Simmons kind of right there with him.
I want to talk more about that probably on the show tomorrow.
Yeah, definitely.
Just because we've been trying to kind of figure that out and see what that was going to look like. And I mean, man, Auburn's got to find a way to be more effective in special teams. I mean, we've talked about it just across the board and all three assets and facets of it, but you've got to be better in special teams, man. You have to.
Did Eric Singleton, I mean, I'm guessing he would have. I'm trying to see what his stats were last year returning kicks or punts at Georgia Tech.
I'm sure he did. Yeah. I mean, unless Auburn just like discovered this about him, I'm sure he did. We know that Malcolm did. He did at Auburn last year, I believe. He was on some kick return coverage.
He returned 9 punts for 124 yards last year.
Yeah. I mean, at least he's got experience. I mean, he is definitely your, I would think, it's, we have to secure this. We have to catch this football. Maybe not. I know he's fast. I know that. We know the speed of Eric Singleton. I feel like he is much more of your hands team.
Sure.
Punt and kick return guy.
Which is right now, again,
all you're looking for.
I don't care about net yardage, man. They could boot it 70 yards. Just make sure you catch the ball or just get out of the way.
Get out of the way. Rush 11. But then Auburn would hit the kicker and give him a first down and cause even more problems. So.
Pain.
Well, hey, we appreciate you being with us on the show today. If you missed it, check out the podcast, ESPNAU.com. We're back tomorrow. Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network, Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC, and a whole lot more. That's 2 to 4 right here on ESPN 106.7. So until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.